Hey, this is Golden Tate, and you're listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast.
Welcome, one and all, to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. But you gathered that from the dulcet tones of Golden Tate, who has now entered us into this wonderful PODcast. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. I'm Chris Lemieux, at Adequate Host, and I am your host, who is Adequate. And joining me here, as always, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit on Lion. Hello, Jeremy.
Welcome to the offseason, everyone.
It is the official offseason now, not just for the Lions, who have been on offseason for a month and about a month, but it is for everyone now, including your Super Bowl 51 champions, the New England Patriots.
Just, I hear the pain in your voice.
That should send a shiver up everyone's spine, too. Also joining us is Ryan Matthews.
Back is the mother.
At Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, hello.
What's going on, guys?
Ryan, in here, you can't see this, not a visual medium, but Ryan is sporting some additional additional gear, let's say. He's got a mustache.
Keeping that upper lip warm.
It's cold in the D.
So, I hate you. Well, guys, before we start on our main topic, we're going to be doing a positional review this week. What did we settle on, Jeremy? Are we talking about running backs?
We are.
Okay, we're talking about running backs. The thing that Detroit has not had since Barry Sanders. And we're going to be doing a small list cast this week. List cast is back, talking about the best Super Bowls of your lifetime. But let's start on Super Bowl 51, the one we just witnessed. And, wow. Wow, I don't know where to start on this one, because holy shit. So someone else start, because I have there's too much going in my head to even start on what I just saw, watching the Falcons just completely go down against the Patriots like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a jumbled mess of emotions still today. I was actively rooting for the Falcons the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
Not so ironically enough, the Patriots, who are actually the fascists, won the Super Bowl.
Literally, Richard Spencer was on Twitter, Richard Spencer, who is a neo-Nazi, on Twitter, rooting for the Patriots.
Because they were, quote-unquote, the whitest team in the league, and they had three white wide receivers, and Atlanta was, I think he called, a mess?
Yeah, because it has black people in it. So of course, this guy's a freak. He's an ethno-nationalist who got like fucking punched on live TV, and you can still find gifs of it going around there. It's pretty good. But
as far as a football contest, though,
yeah. I think this is a problem. You should not be thinking about football in like political terms. Although, granted, a lot of people did. But either way,
it was hard not to. Just with some of the social climate, considering that there was a interview with the 45th president of the United States, Mr. Donald Trump, with Bill O'Reilly, literally 2 hours before the game on Fox during the pregame.
Donald Trump, by the way, who left Mar-a-Lago early when the Patriots were down 28-3.
And then Mike Pence caused Rembert Brown to be late, or his flight to be late to Atlanta. So I don't know. Like, we're pretty all clear on the idea that Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time after that game, right?
Jeremy, I don't want to do this. We're getting into some very... I thought we talked about this on the first bite. Like, this is hard to do because just generations of quarterbacks change. Jeremy, take it away.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really want to get into this debate again, but I don't think a Super Bowl win necessarily changes that.
But let's talk about this, because this is from, like, both sides on what happened. So, in case you were under a rock, Atlanta came out and just beat the brakes off of New England. They beat the T out of Boston. They put up, and we never saw it coming. It was 21 unanswered points in a half. And Bill Belichick, like, barely gets in a field goal before that half ends.
And it was really in the second quarter, because it was 0-0 after the first quarter. So Atlanta pinned 21 on them in the second quarter alone.
Yeah, it was just unbelievable. I've never seen any, like, I thought at that point, this is going the way of 2013. When the Seattle Seahawks put up, like, what, 43 on Denver? Like, I thought it was going south really quick.
That would have been glorious. Although, I don't know, there's part of me that's torn, because I know we were all pulling for Atlanta. I think, though, in the end, I was more pleased that we got a very entertaining game than I would have been if it was just like a 28-13 game. If that would have been the final, that would have been pretty boring and not as exciting. But in the end, it's just hard to see the Patriots up there again. And, like, I don't associate Tom Brady with Michigan anymore. I don't really think. I think people, Wolverine fans who cling to him as, like, oh, the greatest ever went to Michigan. It's like, well, he didn't really do anything at Michigan too exciting, even though they won a national championship while he was there. It wasn't on his tail, really. So, I don't know. I'm happy we got a good game. It was very exciting. I watched the game with one Patriots fan and one very anti-Patriots fan. Not even a Falcons fan, but... So... I'm just happy we got a good game. Finally, after, like, one of the worst playoffs ever, we got something that was entertaining. And, you know, I guess we're just used to the Patriots winning at this point, so it doesn't hurt too much anymore.
I would say for me, when it comes to the good game thing, I think I'm with you, Jeremy. Ryan, what would you say? Would you rather have seen a beatdown, given that it is the Patriots, or would you say you wanted a good game?
I was highly entertained with what happened in the first half.
Yeah.
Like it was enough... It was enough seeing Atlanta just go up on New England the way that they did, scoring touchdowns on offense. Robert Alford's 83-yard interception return that he took back to the house, where Brady looked anything but Tom Brady in the first half. John Boy told everybody to go ahead and count out touchdown Tom, but there was one problem, is that you can't count him out, right?
Nope, and he admitted as much.
Can we talk about Tom Brady's game a little bit? Because I actually thought he didn't play that well.
Well, hold on. Before we do that, I just want to say on the subject of good getting an entertaining game, I want an entertaining game, but this is like... The problem is like when you have the evil empire in here, right?
Right.
Like, we can all admit the Red Sox, 0-4, reverse sweeping the Yankees. That's good because it's not the Yankees doing it. It's an underdog. It's the Red Sox. Golden State... dropping 3-1. We had all turned on Golden State. Imagine if Golden State had come back from 3-1 down. Like, this is kind of the thing. Like, that's kind of the... I'll be honest, I would have taken the Packers doing this over the Patriots. Anyone but the Patriots with their mantle of hardware. This is, that's the thing. Like, it was a great, furious comeback. In a vacuum, I would have enjoyed it even more. But I'm trying not to be salty. It was, it's the Patriots, man. And it's Atlanta doing it to itself, too. Like, Atlanta had, there were 2 points where Atlanta lost the game. The Matt Ryan fumble and throwing it into reverse for, like, what, 30 yards? But you're absolutely right, Jeremy. Like, Tom Brady did not have a good game to start this out at all.
Yeah, I mean, he was clearly rattled with the pressure that was coming before him, because even when he got some time, he overthrew a couple potential huge plays by a good 2-3 yards. Receivers weren't even getting their hands on it. And so I do think people are going to lose sight of that and, you know, anoint Brady GOAT. And that's fine. He certainly has the hardware for it, but he's kind of part of the reason why they were down 28-3 in this game, right? I mean, the pick six alone, right? That's huge. That's something that you usually don't survive a Super Bowl game with.
No, there were so many plays that are probably for all the wrong reasons are going to fall by the wayside. Like, people are going to forget about Dante Hightower's, you know, hit that forced the fumble that, you know, put the Patriots finally in, you know, such beneficial field position that if they didn't score, then, I mean, it was just over regardless. But I just feel like from watching that game, my biggest takeaway is, yes, the Patriots overcame a 25-point deficit to come back and win. But if I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan, which I think last night, everybody by proxy, if you were not a Patriots fan, you were therefore a Falcons fan last night. Watching that game had to have been the most heart-wrenching experience because there was nothing you could do to control the play calling. Because there became a point in the game last night in which the Falcons were not playing the Patriots. Their opponents were the clock, and they could not beat the clock.
Like, honestly, like, that red zone? This is where it all fell apart, the red zone trip, where they decide to drop back to throw instead, and Matt Ryan, gets sacked, and they have the holding call, and before you know it, they're out of field goal range, a field goal that would have iced that game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean the possession before that, when you have the, when you have the Dante Hightower strip sack, you know, why are you throwing the ball on third and one?
And I get it too, because we saw Tevin Coleman leave the game and he was hot, but Devonta Freeman was still pretty hot too. Like, there was no reason at that point. And again, you had gotten into some good cover, good area. I just felt like they just started to get too cute at the end of the game.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to make clear too, though, is that I don't have a huge problem with you passing the ball on third and one, but it was the play call itself that was a problem. Why are you dropping back, taking a 3-5-step drop, whatever it was, but you're dropping back big time to pass downfield? Like, if you're going to throw the ball, throw it out in the flats, have it be a short, 3-yard out route, something that just seems to make a lot more sense than trying to get down the field. I understand the idea of being, a little less predictable, but I mean, at a certain point, you have to realize you have to prioritize these things. Like, the drive that you're talking about, Chris, the one with only 4 minutes and some change left.
Yeah.
Like, you have to prioritize, okay, we are on New England's 23-yard line after one of the most insane catches I've ever seen by Julio Jones.
You are all like that. That's awful.
Like, you're on the 23-yard line. If you go nowhere on the next two plays, you're looking at a 40-yard field goal, and you're looking at a two-possession game because you'd be up by 11 at that point, and I really think that puts the game out of reach for the Patriots. But instead, they come up empty-handed, Jeremy, and I think you have no one. Atlanta has no one to blame but themselves for not beating the clock.
To quote Detroit's own Mike Valenti in a far earlier rant about 10 years ago or so in regards to a Michigan State game, it's the only thing I had in my mind while watching this was just Mike Valenti screaming, "They choked on applesauce." Because that's what they did. That's what the Falcons did. They had every right to win this game, and they just started punching themselves repeatedly.
Yeah, the defining moment of that game should have been that catch by Julio Jones.
That's it.
The most phenomenal catch I've ever seen, and now it's not even going to be the best catch of the game because of it. Right?
Yeah.
Now we're only going to remember the crazy-ass catch by Edelman that, was 99% luck and 1% holy crap Edelman.
And even then, that's kind of on the Atlanta backfield, too, because they're all busy trying to make a play, and they prevent that ball from falling to the ground.
Yeah, if that ball's tipping the air, you just tackle Edelman, because he's not going to catch it if you just tackle him after it got tipped. Instead, they all, went for the interception, and I can get that. You want to end the game, but I mean, just what they did after that Julio Jones catch is unbelievable to me. It's unbelievable and it's unforgivable. It's almost up there with the Seahawks pass against the Patriots a couple years ago. It was that bad.
Absolutely. This brings me to a bigger point. Like, holy crap. Like, think of how many times we've had these kind of issues with the Patriots in Super Bowls. Because he had that pass. What was it? The tuck rule. That screwed up the Raiders way back, too. Like, the Patriots just, like, they have, and that's kind of the more infuriating thing about this game. But at the same time, too, this was also very incredibly Atlanta for the Falcons to fall apart like this. And you can ask Bomani Jones, because he was the only person who used to be a Falcons fan on Twitter, is like, they're going to screw this up. They're going to screw this up somehow.
I don't like feeding into that, because that's essentially same old Lions for Atlanta, right?
Yeah, but I think
it's just funny because it's them, not us.
I don't know, man. Like, I saw a lot of people speaking of the Lions angle, taking as like, oh yeah, this is what would happen to the Lions.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I sent out that tweet last night. It was like, the one good thing about never being a Super Bowl is that can never happen to us. Because that would be devastating. Like, I don't know what... I wouldn't be able to write anything today. Pride of Detroit would have just been barren. I would have just, like, put a blank post up or something.
Yeah, like, I want to start ranking this here, because we've had quite a few meltdowns now in the past sports calendar year. We saw the Cleveland Indians lose a 3-1 series lead. We saw Golden State lose a 3-1 series lead. I was even comparing it because I kept thinking about Donald Trump leaving Mar-a-Lago early in the game, and then, like, sending out a congratulations afterwards. All I saw from that was, like, I kept flashing back, Ryan will appreciate this, I kept flashing back to the...
Miami?
Yeah, to the 2013 NBA Finals, Spurs-Heat. Game 6, the Spurs bury the Heat. Heat fans leave, and then Ray Allen hits that shot to go to overtime, and they're just Heat fans pounding on the doors to be let back in.
Yeah, those tickets say no re-entry, homeboy.
But, like, where, like, okay, so the easy one is Golden State, but where do you rank this as far as all-time? And I said earlier the 04 ALCS where the Red Sox, like, reverse swept the Yankees. Like, where do you put this as far as just all-time choke jobs in sports?
It's got to be high up there, because you look at, like, those win percentage things. It was, like, 99, 98, sure. 99.5.
I saw a 98.7 at one point.
Yeah.
And the important thing to hear too is, like, okay, we've seen these leads evaporate before in football, not in the Super Bowl.
Well, that's also really strange to me, that the biggest deficit that someone came back from in the Super Bowl was only 10. Because you take, like, this season alone, I bet that's like 13 points has probably happened 20, 30, maybe even 40 times this season alone. Sure. So that's insane. But I mean, 25 is a lot of points. 19 in the last quarter, I think that to me is even bigger.
I think that just goes to show you how much of a bungle this was by the coaching staff. Like, I think it had a lot less to do with the players toiling it away than it was the complete and utter mismanagement and incompetence of the Atlanta coaching staff. Like, their time management was absolutely horrendous. Like, I'll come back and say it again, but in the second half, after that third quarter, the Falcons weren't playing the Patriots anymore. They were playing the clock. And the fact that they couldn't beat the clock, which isn't all that difficult of a thing to do as long as you're keeping the ball on the ground and you're keeping the clock moving. I mean, it is what it is. Like, both of you guys, this is a question for both of you guys, but after Brady scores that touchdown and they get the 2-point conversion and the game is tied and they win that coin toss in overtime, it was no question in my mind that the Patriots were going to score. Like, the Falcons' defense was so completely tired. Like, did either of you guys think that the best offense in the league, you know, the best offense in the league in 2016 was going to have a chance to come back out on the field? I didn't think so. I was like, I'm going to watch the Patriots win the Super Bowl.
It's just, yeah, their only hope was to stop them for a field goal, because that defense was out there for the entire fourth quarter. And, I mean, we were talking about this last night. The Patriots had something like 96 or 94 offensive plays.
That's what I'm saying. Like, Atlanta was statistically the better team, right? Like, they played, like, their stats show that they should have won the football game, but they didn't.
Well, yeah, on a per-play basis, 7.5 yards per play compared to the Patriots' 5.9. Yeah,
like
that's a big
the
difference.
Patriots the Patriots' best offensive play in the first half was defensive holding on Atlanta. Like that was their best yeah. offensive play. Like hold on, I think their longest play before the fourth quarter, their longest play was Brady's scramble for 15 yards.
All right. I just want to ask again, with all this, again, that you're putting up here, where do you rank this in all-time collapses?
If all sports, I still, it's tough because we're comparing some of it to, like, series leads, like
yeah.
the Boston 3-0 comeback over the Yankees. That has to be number one to me. But if you're talking a single game, and especially in the championship game, I don't know if you could find one worse than this.
I think it doesn't pass Golden State being up 3-1 because usually talent always finds a way to win out, especially in basketball. And that mm-hmm. Golden State team was obviously historically good. Baseball, yeah. a lot of fluky things can happen based on pitching matchups and whatnot from game to game. But like Jeremy said, I think that it's kind of hard. It's comparing apples to oranges a little bit just because you're playing a one game versus a series. So, but as far as a one game collapse, I'm not sure if I've ever seen anything like that, especially just with it being on the biggest stage of them all.
This has to be up there, though. This has to be one of the biggest things we've seen, like in a championship scenario. Oh. Like, because there's been bigger leads lost, but just not here. Not here.
You just think about how long this like Lions Cowboys playoff game is sticking with you, and think about how much worse this would be. Like you're never gonna forget this as a Falcons fan. You're never gonna forgive them for throwing it on second and one and third and one and the other third and one. You're just never gonna forget that. It's oof. Well, I feel for Falcons fans right now. It hurts.
You know what? The thing too is like it's not even the Falcons fans that are going to forget it. It's that the Saints fans out there are going to make sure they never forget it either, because they were the real winners from last night.
Saints fans, whatever. I don't care. Talk to me when your team's relevant again.
They do have a Super Bowl, and
yeah, and they also had all that problems. Your coach got suspended for a year because he was a dickbag, so.
I almost thought about bringing on our old friend, what was his name from the Saints podcast? I should know it. Super Saiyan Satan on Twitter.
That's what I know him as.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't remember names. All right, the last note I have here, and I know you want to talk about it, Ryan, the Lady Gaga halftime show.
Hey, I enjoyed it.
I saw some people saying it's not Prince, but it's up there in that like conversation of like top five halftime shows for Super Bowl.
Sure, too. I think the other thing that it had working for it was that it was going up against the recent memory of what happened last year during the Super Bowl and that stink storm with Coldplay and Bruno Mars and Beyonce being Play-Doh'd together to form some kind of very disjointed halftime show. But
it's not like the last few years have been good either.
Right. Yeah, so Gaga puts on a great performance, by all accounts. I mean, if any of her fans will testify that, you know, she's an incredible performer. And I remember a few years ago, I want to say it was like 2011 or 2012, there was an HBO special of her doing shows at the Garden. And I remember watching that and being, like, really impressed with her, like, showmanship and everything. But yeah, I mean, she really brought it. I mean, like jumping in from the roof, like that was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
she jumped twice out of frame. I was afraid for her.
Yeah, one time live too. Like I know it was pre-recorded from the roof, but like the second time where she catches the football and jumps off, that's live. And I heard a lot of people saying like that the Bad Romance number at the end was like incredibly well done.
Do you think she was more nervous jumping from the top of the stadium or trying to catch the ball at the end? Because if she drops that at the end, like that ruins the whole performance.
Oh yeah, no,
right?
It's the end.
That's like the left shark moment of the halftime show.
There's no way. Like I'm afraid of heights. Like I'm not jumping off any roof. You got to be kidding me. She showed some football skills though. Like in the pregame, like she was throwing spirals. She was out on the field like before the game started.
What? I didn't see that.
Yeah. So I mean, like,
she must have been doing powder puff while in high school.
She must have been doing something. I don't know. She was practicing her Gronk spike, too, because she threw that microphone down with some goddamn authority.
Yeah, she did.
And
she's probably done that before.
Dude,
yeah.
I thought one of the coolest thing too, though, is how she kind of just like thumbed her nose to everybody who thought she was going to make some big like political statement by just starting off her show by doing something that was much more unifying than something that might be a little more divisive. By singing the national anthem.
I don't know.
Anthem.
People kept reading into that, though, as being divisive. If you are of the sort of person who just... Like, I know some people of a certain political leaning who are just... They've humanly hated the idea of Gaga being in that. And that just kind of rubs salt in their wound. Mm. But I agree with you there. It was a nice touch. But then, like, the only quibble I have with it is that it made us both eat shit on the prop bet.
I'll eat my poop sandwich.
I had overtime. I just want to say
cling to that one victory, Chris.
Yeah, the only one I had. Ryan kicked my ass. Did you ever compile the whole list of victories and losses?
We'll talk about it off air. I don't want to do this to you publicly.
Okay.
I got one more thing on the halftime show.
Yeah.
So Telephone, which is a song I had completely forgotten about, but that I actually kind of like. Did you think there was any chance that a pregnant Beyonce was going to come out and do her verse in that song?
No, I didn't. But the other thing, too, I just read is that she's going on with doing Coachella, even though that she's pregnant.
Jesus. Oh, that sounds...
Don't.
Irresponsible.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we got to talk about some Lions. We are really late. We need to get started in talking about your Detroit Lions running back review. The running backs are up this week, and then we're going to be doing a quick list cast and getting to your mailbag, so stick around.
To be clear, the people at Pride of Detroit do think that Beyonce is responsible as a mother and an individual.
All right, back here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, let's talk about running backs. In our continuing saga of reviewing the Detroit Lions that were and preparing for free agency, we have talked about cornerbacks, we've talked about wide receivers, we've talked about actually the whole secondary, and we've talked about wide receivers. Now let's move on to running backs. Jeremy, this was not a good year to talk about this unit because you were missing Ameer Abdullah. You had Theo Riddick for most of it, but this was just a war of attrition on the unit. And it makes it hard to evaluate this one clearly, I would say.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's definitely a faction among Lions fans right now on how exactly they need to tackle the running back position this offseason. There are some that are like, give Abdullah a chance. Him, Theo Riddick, Zach Zenner, that can work in 2017. And then there's some that are like, you know what? This is made it clear. Theo Riddick is not a rushing guy. If anything happens to Ameer Abdullah again this year, we're back where we were this year. They need to add someone in the draft or in free agency, and they probably need to make it a high priority. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic because it's either like Lions need to hit this hard or Lions don't need to do anything. And I think at this point, I'm actually kind of leaning towards they don't need to do anything. One thing I noticed out of the Super Bowl is just like how amazing of a duo Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman were. And a lot was in the passing game. And I think if both these running backs are healthy, and I know that's a big if, although I don't think a lot of people are calling both these running backs injury prone, which I have another issue with what I'll talk about a little later. But just watching the way that they were able to incorporate both backs, both in the backfield, and more specifically in the passing game. That got me really excited because I think that's something that we didn't get to see a lot of out of Ameer Abdullah in his rookie year. I think he can be pretty dynamic in the passing game as well. And we saw it at the beginning of this year. He was running the ball pretty damn well. So I think they can rely on Ameer Abdullah as that workhorse back. And if they really need a short yardage back, Zach Zenner will do. It's not great, but he'll do.
Well, before we get on to that, I would say, and we're going to talk about the players here in a second, but I want to pitch this right back to you, Jeremy. Do you think the running game in the NFL is changing? Because you mentioned the passing to the running backs.
Yeah.
Like,
definitely. I mean, yeah, there's no question that passing game is more important these days than the running game. And, I mean, you look at that Atlanta offense, because I think they were kind of the prototype of what you would want in a team, regardless of what happened in the second half. They do have home run threats in the running game. I think they had like a 38, maybe 40 yard run that was huge in the first half there. And that's what the Lions were missing this year. And that's what Amir Abdullah can provide. But you need your backs to be the two type of backs. You either need a guy that can be both, either can be a complete workhorse and you don't really need him that much in the running game, or you need him to be a double threat. And that's what the Lions have in Amir Abdullah, is that double threat. We just need to see it for a full season. I'm really excited for him because he seems like very, very devoted. I really liked what I heard from him as a person after the injury. He seems very humbled by the experience. I think he's going to be the guy that's in the workout facility, first guy in, last guy out kind of deal. This guy's going to work his ass off to get back in that lineup this year or not. And I'm just excited about it.
I mean, look at the other side of the ball, or from last night. Look at the Patriots. James White had 14 receptions. I mean, you have guys that you can put together. You can form a complementary backfield where you have these multiple guys who need to fill certain roles. And is Zach Zenner ideal as a, you know, between the tackles, short yardage situation guy? Probably not. You could definitely stand to upgrade him, but. I think what last night proved to me is you need to do a lot of work up front before you can start, pegging in guys or plugging in guys to be your running backs. Like, Atlanta went out last offseason and they got Alex Mack to be their center. And they also benefited from having, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they have the same starting five for their offensive line for the entire season? Like, I don't think that they ever lost a start to injury, and that was one of the most impressive things about Atlanta this season. So when you have that kind of continuity up front and your offensive line is healthy for the entire season, it pays dividends in your running game. It pays dividends in the things that it'll open up for your running back. So I think what the Lions have right now is totally workable, and I think that we haven't seen enough from Amir Abdullah quite yet to label him as either like a boom or a bust. So,
and I don't want to label him injury prone either.
Like, no, that's not fair yet at all.
No, it's not. It's not. I think he could be. I mean, I think the only thing I see the Lions really missing is just, you know, you've mentioned a lot before, Ryan, like a bruiser, someone to go like up the middle and just kind of just deal this and just kind of, you know, punish the line whenever they can. Because that's not Amir Abdullah, no matter how good he might be. And that's not Theo Riddick.
No, it's not. Let me ask you a question real quick, Jeremy. Do you think that they can address that need in the draft? Like, later, I mean, I know we haven't done too much draft digging, but isn't that a guy that you can probably draft, like, later in the draft that you don't have to spend a first-round pick on to get, like, a Dalvin Cook or somebody?
Yeah, I think that's a realistic option. The one guy we haven't been talking about, and I don't know if he really fits his profile, he doesn't really, is Dwayne Washington, who, in my opinion, doesn't really have a future on the team, to be honest. Not to take anything away from his rookie year or to give up on him early, I just think he never really was considered to be an option. He's a seventh-round pick for a reason. But I think you could also address it in free agency. We talked a little bit about this off-air. Eddie Lacy kind of fits that profile. You're not going to make him your workhorse back, and maybe he's going to demand a little more money than your kind of 3, 4, 5, maybe even 6 yard or 6 carries per game kind of guy. But I can see that match kind of work if he's interested in it.
I called Eddie Lacy a mobile cheeseburger this year, so this is a really tough situation you're putting me in. But I mean, I think
the
I agree
other
with
issue
one.
With him is injuries, obviously. If you want to talk about someone who's actually injury prone, it's probably Eddie Lacy.
Well, you talked about Dwayne Washington a little bit earlier. What do we make of the future of Zach Zenner with this team? Because he had some flair late in the year, but in hindsight, I mean, for a couple plays. On a macro level, wasn't good. Earlier in the season, certainly wasn't good. What do we make of ZZ?
I think what you make of him is that you can go into next season and have something that is at least serviceable. Like, if you choose not to address that situation because you think that, A, you have enough of a dynamic pairing in Abdullah and Riddick and you're confident in their ability to, you know, stay healthy as a unit, that you can fall back on center. I think that what he proved down the stretch was that he can fill in a pinch, you know, that mm-hmm. if you don't, like I said, if you choose not to address the running back quote unquote problem that we have, I think that you could, you can look to him and you can expect him to be serviceable. I don't know. What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, I think there's a couple things interesting about Zenner. One is that, yeah, he did, like, when the Lions were really struggling at the end of the year, he was the one bright spot, right? He had that really good half against the Cowboys, another pretty good half against the Packers. And then also, an article came out today, a couple Lions veterans were talking about who could have a breakout year in 2017, and Anquan Boldin picked out Zach Zenner, which I thought was pretty surprising. He said, you know, he's a guy that can kind of do everything. He picks up the blitz effectively, runs the ball pretty effectively, and we even saw him involved a little bit in the receiving game too. But like you said, I don't think the Lions want this guy to be anything more than a third string running back. This is a guy who's just there in case you need him, and that's fine. I think you were onto a point earlier though. We're talking about the 32nd ranked running game, right? Mm-hmm. And that points to a fundamental problem that isn't just fixed with one running back. In fact, that's exactly what Bob Quinn said a couple weeks ago, right? I think I have the quote pulled up here. This isn't you pick one running back at the top of the draft and your running game is fixed. That's not how the league works. And he's absolutely right. This is a fundamental issue. This is an issue where the Lions don't have a cohesive offensive line, and we don't know what it's going to look like because, as we talked about a couple weeks ago, or last week, this right side of the offensive line, we don't know what to expect out of it. So they really need to shore that up, get a scheme that's working for everybody, and then see where this set of running backs takes them, in my opinion.
And real quick, too, when I was talking about Atlanta and them having, you know, reworked their offensive line, adding Alex Mack in the middle, them being healthy the entire season, what's one thing that Zenner didn't have the benefit of those last few games? He didn't have Travis Swanson. Mm-hmm. He had Lakin Tomlinson back in there. He had young Graham Glasgow. Like you said, the entire right side of that line is going to be reworked, and who knows if Larry Warford is going to be back. Who knows if Riley Reiff is going to be back. So I would rather Bob Quinn spend the resources allocating them towards building the trenches. And I know this is kind of like football cliche, but I mean, it's kind of proven itself to be true that once you fortify what you have up front, then you can look at what the Cowboys did. Incredible offensive line. They spent so much time investing resources into beefing it up. And then, hey, they were picking fourth in the draft last year, and they got a running back who made them the top team in the NFC.
I can understand the frustration from Lions' point of view, though. Oh, yeah. Because the Lions have been pumping their own resources into the offensive line for the past 5-6 years, too. It just hasn't worked out like it has with the Cowboys. But that brings us to the other question, and we touched on the draft a little bit. If one of these top two running backs, Dalvin Cook or Leonard Fournette, they're there at 21, are you guys biting at all?
No.
There's too much else to fix first. There's too much.
I think the thing, too, though, like, and Chris, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but if people are worried about Ameer Abdullah being injury prone, do we want Dalvin Cook, who's had a litany of injury concerns himself?
I just hate doing this injury prone or even talking about whether or not guys have had injuries before, because it is a crapshoot, like, right? Like, because it is always self-fulfilling. You can say a guy's injury prone. If he doesn't get injured again, then no one talks about it again. Or if he gets injured again, then it's like,
he's been injured. Totally fair.
Matt Stafford.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he was the China doll in the beginning of his career, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And ever since then, he's been kind of a model of being healthy. But
and to be very clear, the running back position is a position where everyone is injury prone.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone gets hurt playing running back. It is the most painful position in football to play because everyone is going to hit.
Wasn't it Reggie Bush who, when he was with the Lions, he described as being an NFL running back, he said you'd get into like 15 to 20 car crashes per game.
Pretty much. Yeah, because that is the only position where you are guaranteed to get hit every time. Unless you like have a breakaway touchdown, you are guaranteed to get hit and get hit hard.
So it kind of sounds like we're all kind of in agreement where we think the Lions are just kind of in wait and see mode. Is there any specific players either through the draft or free agency that you'd like them to bring in just kind of as reassurance, as someone to be there just in case, or even, you know, potentially be that bruiser role that we were talking about?
It's the day after the Super Bowl. I need a few days to start brushing up on free agency.
I think an interesting name, and Jeremy, don't laugh, but LeGarrette Blount fumbled last night and he didn't touch the ball a whole lot after that. And they have Deion Lewis and they have James White, and they have a bit of a reputation of letting guys walk in free agency and being able to, you know, fill their own holes. The Patriots do so.
And then those guys sucking elsewhere too.
You think Belichick's going to hold a grudge all off season for that one fumble?
Yes. Yes.
If there's any coach who would do that, it'd be Bill Belichick.
Hold on. We
forgot to talk about this in the podcast. I mean, in the last segment, he's already talking about 2017, Bill Belichick.
Like the morning after.
That's my coach, man. That's my
the
coach.
He's talking about how, oh, well, you know, we're already 5 weeks behind the rest of the teams in getting ready for 2017.
Eat my
Dude,
ass.
Dude, get off yourself.
I'm sorry. I love that.
No, sports needs to be at least about a modicum of joy. I was watching the NCAA tournament. Was it last year? Villanova, North Carolina? You know, the amazing trading of buzzer beater shots for Villanova to win that game. I remember because, you know, my day job at the time was running boards. I was a board op for a radio station carrying Westwood One. I forget who was on there. It's a very famous guy from Georgetown basketball. When it was like, again, miraculous, miraculous win for Villanova. And he immediately says there, as the confetti's falling, on Westwood One, the national carrier for the NCAA championship, he's saying, well, you can't celebrate too much. You've got to get your guys ready for next season. Like, this has to stop.
Well, okay. Patriots are getting plenty of celebration in. If you're looking for Bill Belichick to be part of that celebration, you're lucky that he even smiled yesterday.
You know what his celebration is? He probably goes home and plays John Boy's Bill Belichick offseason simulator.
the greatest video game of all time.
Jeremy, I know you've kind of just barely gleamed over the running backs that are available in free agency. I mean, is there anybody that sticks out to you? Because they definitely have to fit a profile, though, right? Like, the Lions aren't going to give up on Riddick. Yeah. They just re-upped him money last season. They're not going to give up on Abdullah so soon.
I mean, I don't know. The one interesting name out there, and I'm not throwing my support behind this necessarily, but Mike Payton talked about it last week in one of his articles, and that's Latavius Murray. He's just about as high profile of a running back that you'll see hit free agency, because let's all be honest, Le'Veon Bell's not going anywhere. You know, he had almost 800 rushing yards last year. Oakland's kind of got a stacked backfield there. I think it's very reasonable to think that he might hit free agency, and I don't know. I mean, I understand the desire to go after a big free agent in free agency, because I mean a shakeup would be good. I don't think it's necessary. I think at this point it might be a little luxury spending to go after running back, and I don't know how much Latavius Murray is going to call on free agency, but I don't know. I'm kind of with you with like a LeGarrette Blount or an Eddie Lacy, a guy who's probably only going to command $3-4 million a year. Is that kind of bruiser role? That's something that I'm looking for. I mean, I don't know who else out there. Matt Asiata doesn't really interest me that much. I don't think they're going to bring Justin Forsett back. So one of those two guys, or just leave it. Is kind of my plan.
Yeah, I think if you're looking for names of guys who you can probably maybe look to snatch up in the middle rounds or maybe towards the end of the draft, I'm a big fan of Kareem Hunt. Watching him in the Senior Bowl, I thought he was really interesting.
He's not very big.
I think he only measured in around like 5'10 and like 210, but like, I mean, he has a lot of incredible balance.
If I can just say this as someone who watched a lot of Toledo football, he's good.
Yeah.
He's very good, and you can develop him. You can absolutely develop
him. And I think the other name that I think is really interesting that can be had much later in the draft, maybe like if you're talking maybe rounds like maybe 5 or 6, but James Conner from Pittsburgh. He's a real big bruiser back, 6'2", 240. I mean,
he had 1 year, I think his like, he set like an NCAA record that was immediately broken by Samaje Perine of Oklahoma. But people forgot, like, he had an injury, I think. I can't remember. But
he had cancer.
Was that it? Yeah. Jesus. Okay, so yes. But I'm just saying, like, he kind of fell off the radar in the last year, but he is a very good running back.
Yeah. Yes.
But NCAA people know, like, college football people know him. He is a pretty big name.
He had a knee injury, too. So, I mean, you're not... Yeah,
That's what I was thinking of. Thank you. Thank you for scaring me that I just called cancer an injury. Holy shit.
Yeah, he had that on top of overcoming cancer, which is a pretty cool story. I think that he would be a really interesting guy for the Lions to target, and he would definitely fit that profile of the kind of running back they're looking for.
All right, we got to take a break here. We are pretty late in the podcast, but we still need to do a list cast, and we still need to do your mailbag, so stick around. All right, continuing along here on the Pride of Detroit podcast, we're doing something special now. ListCast is back. ListCast theme still pending. Sorry, it's been a long week for me. We're going to have it together for you very soon. But this Super Bowl, I think we can say, probably one of the greatest endings that we've seen all time, right? Like one of the greatest play Super Bowls we've seen.
For sure. Yep. It's up there.
Even though it was the bad guys winning in the end, it was pretty good. But it got us thinking. Ryan, do you want to explain the background on this?
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a whole lot to explain outside of the fact that I thought this podcast needed a list cast because that's when this podcast is really hitting its stride. So why not just talk about our top three favorite Super Bowls from our lifetime?
I have five, but... Well,
look at you, overachiever. I thought that we could do three because we're already running over on this podcast.
Sure. Let me just... This actually makes it difficult because now I have to trim some of mine.
Give us your two honorable mentions.
Okay. Well, give me a second. Let me just say real quick as a qualifier, this is in our lifetime. So I think we're setting the cutoff at like 90s onward. I know some of our listeners are probably older. Maybe they remember some of the 80s or whatever. But we're some young pups. We're cutting it off at the 90s here. So one of my honorable mentions right now is going to be Super Bowl... I'm sorry, I'm trying to remember how to read Roman numerals. Super Bowl 44, Saints-Colts. Just because, again, like the Colts kind of collapsed down the stretch there, but, I mean, the Saints were down at halftime and they had to make an onside kick to really overcome all of this. And Drew Brees had to go, like, unconscious in the second half. But that was one of my top five. But I will gladly knock it out. It's not exactly one of the better ones I have up there. And then I am going to knock out Super Bowl... Ooh, this is a tough one. This is a really tough one.
What, reading the Roman numeral or picking one?
Shut up. I hate you so much. I'm going to knock out Super Bowl 25, 1991, where the Bills missed the field goal to win the game. I don't have too many memories of it, so I really can't say too much on it. It's probably one of the better Super Bowls out there, and it still probably haunts Buffalo to this day, but I can't put it in my top three. Top three in my lifetime.
I don't even have anything from the 90s because the games weren't that good unless you just wanted to watch Buffalo choke. That's all that happened in the 90s Super Bowls, as far as I'm concerned.
I do have one from the 90s, but we'll get to it when we get to our top three. Okay. Ryan, do you want to do the honors and take us away?
Yeah, I could give you my number three.
Sure.
Number three on my list, and it's... hear me out on this one. Super Bowl 43. February 1st.
You had to read the Roman numerals, too.
I actually had to find XL and then count down. Okay, that's 1, 2, yeah. 3. Yep. Super Bowl 43, Pittsburgh Steelers versus the Arizona Cardinals. This game was uber exciting in a few different aspects. First of all, you had the Cardinals, which were a team that kind of limped into the playoffs. And then you had Pittsburgh, who I've always kind of... I've kind of always been a fan of the players that they've had assembled outside of Roethlisberger, but this game had so many like great moments with like James Harrison's interception return for 100 yards at the half, the Larry Fitzgerald touchdown where it seemed like Arizona was going to win their first Super Bowl, and then the incredible Santonio Holmes catch in the back of the end zone. So like those three moments really they stick out to me, and probably the one that sticks out the most to me is that Fitzgerald touchdown, because he just had burners on. Like, he had jets. I thought he was the fastest person I'd ever seen in my entire life. I was like, if he doesn't slow down by, like, the 15-yard line, he's going to run through the padding at the end of the stadium, and he's probably going to take out some fans. But that's number three on my list.
Sure.
Super Bowl 43.
Sorry, real quick aside, are we including Super Bowl 51 in this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so I just wanted to make sure before I continue on.
Yeah.
Okay. Jeremy, why don't you give us your number three?
Well, this one's a little bit fresh in my mind. It's Super Bowl 51, the one we just watched.
That's not your top one, okay.
No, it's not my top one. It just... Because if we're taking a game on its full merit, it just can't be up there, because this wasn't... I like games that go back and forth, you know, that's just like the whole game you're wondering what the hell's going to happen. This, I was highly entertained by the first half, like we talked about before. If it would have just been that half combined in the second half, I would have enjoyed that almost as much, just to watch like the endless cuts to Bill Belichick being frustrated on the sidelines. But instead, we got something that we've never seen in the Super Bowl. We got overtime. We got a comeback of more than 10 points. In fact, it's almost triple that, 25 points. So I think that was a really entertaining game. It had some amazing plays, a pick six, two fantastic catches, and the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. It has to be in the discussion.
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. My number three, there were a couple of really good years to pick from here. My number three is probably going to be Super Bowl 47, Ravens 49ers. If we're going to recognize the come from behind victories, we also have to recognize the almost come from behind. And I mean, there, even though the Ravens put a beating on San Francisco early in the Harbaugh Bowl, as they were calling it that year, because it was Jim Harbaugh, John Harbaugh, there were some just great moments. First off, again, San Francisco nearly came back in this game. Just really, really close. Kaepernick just balled out. Like, he had, like, there was, like, a failed two-point conversion that, I mean, it got so close. But there was also that Jones 108-yard kickoff return. And this was the Blackout Bowl.
It was the Blackout Bowl.
Yeah, so just as a package of just, this is also, I love this bowl because it was my first bowl that I was, like, on Twitter tweeting about. So this was very fun. I loved it. It was I liked the bowl. And enough that as you asked me to purge it, I was trying to decide between this and Bills Giants 91, and I decided to keep this one in. So, all right, number two, what do you got, Ryan?
Number two, I have a Super Bowl that is fairly recent. I have Super Bowl 49.
Really?
Yep, New England versus Seattle. Mm-hmm. I think that it was probably the single greatest play that I've seen in the Super Bowl, the way that it, quote unquote, ended with Malcolm Butler jumping the route and getting the interception on the goal line on the infamous why not just give the ball to Marshawn Lynch play. I thought that it was a great Super Bowl. It went back and forth. It was another Patriots come from behind victory. They were down in the fourth quarter. Tom Brady led them back. They scored the touchdown. And it looked like Seattle was well on their way to being, you know, back to back, you know, Super Bowl champions. And then Malcolm Butler, like I said, jumps that route. And it's probably one of the most iconic plays that'll, you know, ever be in Super Bowl history lore. But, the way that one ended was just,
why didn't you give it really to Marshawn? To me.
Yeah.
Why didn't you give it to Marshawn? Always, always and forever.
This game is also my number two. And I think just for the pure shock value, like, I don't think a result of the Super Bowl has ever switched so drastically in one play, right? Like, Seattle had that game won, and then suddenly New England had that game won. It, you know, win percentage had to be like 95-99 opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Like, that's insane. And we were talking earlier about forgotten plays because of something more amazing that happened later. Let's talk about the Jermaine Kearse catch.
Yeah.
Like 30 seconds before this, it was just like that Brett Favre, you know, he did what catch on Monday Night Football 2 decades ago?
Or the Julian Edelman catch from Sunday night?
Exactly. Just bouncing around on everyone's legs and just lands right on top of Jermaine Kearse on his back. This was a game that had a lot of great plays that are kind of overshadowed by that last shocking play, but that game was entertaining from front to back, so it deserves to be up here.
I think the other thing, too, that was really interesting about just that play, the Malcolm Butler one, is that Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels were both like, what was Pete Carroll thinking? Like, yeah, they were just knew. Like, they were openly, that was one thing that I really was kind of taken, one thing that I was really kind of taking to task about last, or the, you know, Super Bowl 51, their commentating team, like, Buck and Aikman, I thought they did a really poor job of, like, just, like, filling people in on, like, statistics and, like, kind of, like, some of the extra things that were going on in terms of, like, you know, why weren't the Patriots, like, spreading out the Falcons? Like, why are the Falcons having this much success on defense? Like, I felt like they didn't do a very good job of calling the game and being a little bit more analytical. So that's one thing that, you know, I think we've been pretty steadfast and consistent with, is like praising that NBC team of Collinsworth and Michaels being like probably the best that there is in football. So,
I mean, it's really glad looking back. We're not going to have time to talk about it at all this episode, but we all watched this was the XFL 30 for 30 last Thursday. And just one of the things I kept thinking out throughout that is, man, it was really good that NBC got the NFL back.
In some capacity, yeah, absolutely.
In some capacity. Probably even for the better to have that kind of a primetime game like they do.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, yeah. All right. My number two is actually Super Bowl 51. It was really good. Just the wrong guys won. So there's another game I also culled from my top list was Super Bowl 46, and I almost wanted to put it here too, which was Giants Patriots for, I don't remember which round that was. Was that round two that they played?
That was round two, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, but I think in terms of comebacks, that was a pretty good comeback by the Giants, but this was like, again, we talked about this. This was an all-time comeback, an all-time choke. And it's just, I can't have it my number one, though, because it is New England. Yeah, that's a hater thing, but I will gladly take it right now. This is going to go down like the early 2000s Yankees. Just as a team that has just plagued everyone. But I mean, there's no denying, like, we've never had an overtime in a Super Bowl. We've never had a comeback like that. Like, it was great. Number one, Ryan.
It was pretty great. And that's why Super Bowl 51 is not my number one Super Bowl of all time. You like that swerve?
I like it.
My number one Super Bowl is actually a Patriots Super Bowl. But Super Bowl 38. I think it's the greatest football game that I've maybe ever watched. That was New England versus Carolina. Mm-hmm. It was a game that started out very slow. Like, nobody scored. I think it's still a Super Bowl record, but nobody scored for 27 minutes almost. And then in the second quarter, they combined for 24 points. And then it was just a shootout in the fourth quarter. Like, I mean, Carolina put up 19, but New England put up 18. They had the Vinatieri field goal from 41 yards out with 4 seconds left. I mean, the game had everything. Like, it had the big Musheen Muhammad catch for 80-plus yards for a touchdown. Steve Smith was super active, and I think one of the things that really, you know, stands out to me is him kind of being an all-purpose guy as a kickoff and a punt returner. Like, it just had a lot of great stuff in it. Like, I don't know why I remember the Panthers running backs so fondly, but Steven Davis and Deshaun Foster, and also Rod Smart, as you might know him, he hate me, was on that team.
This was the wardrobe malfunction at halftime.
It was. It was the Super Bowl that should have had Outkast at halftime, but the NFL wanted Andre 3000 to shorten his version of Hey Ya, and I Like the Way You Move, and Andre 3000, he doesn't stand for that kind of shit.
He doesn't play that, no.
No, he doesn't. Yeah. Homie don't play that game, but yep, Super Bowl 38, my number one Super Bowl of all time.
It didn't make my list, but it was damn close, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it, because I know my good friend actually listens to this podcast, and he still hasn't forgiven Casey for kicking the kickoff that led to the game-winning field goal out of bounds.
Oh, my Lord. Yes, that's right, because that put the ball at the 40, and it gave the Patriots just all of the opportunity to put it in field goal range.
Yeah, that's oh, man. I wouldn't forgive him either.
One last thing I want to point out. Jake Delhomme played for the NFL Europe's Frankfurt Galaxy in 1999, and then all of a sudden he was in the Super Bowl in 2003.
I'm just saying, we need NFL Europe back. We need that developmental track. But Jeremy, you're number one.
Three words. 18 and one. Super Bowl 42, Giants, Patriots. Who does not love watching a team that is 18-0 get knocked the fuck off the pedestal by David fucking Tyree, someone who no one has ever seen him make any other catch in his career? David Tyree catches one on his helmet. That's incredible to me. I love those kind of stories where just a guy will come out of nowhere and do something amazing on the biggest stage, will change the entire change the entire course of a game out of nowhere. It happened with Malcolm Butler. He's obviously a much bigger name now, but this is a guy who never did anything else in his career. And he put down an 18-0 team on his dome.
We need to come back in here and do, like, top 10 at some point. We're almost on 20 minutes on this segment. But, I mean, because you guys are leaving out a bunch of games that I would want to put up in here, too. Like, just consider this, because my number one's one none of us have mentioned. My number one is Super Bowl 32, Broncos-Packers. Brett Favre, John Elway. John Elway, until this point, has not won a Super Bowl, has presided over multiple Super Bowl losses. And he's near the end of his career, and he needs to win one. This is a close game throughout. These are two Hall of Fame quarterbacks leading it. There's Terrell Davis. This game's being played in San Diego. Terrell Davis, San Diego native, with a go-ahead touchdown with less than 2 minutes to go. And he's suffering a migraine the entire time.
We know what that's code for.
Yeah.
In Ryan's defense, he wasn't born yet, so he didn't see the Super Bowl.
Shut up. I was alive and well.
This was 98. This was 98. Yeah. He would have seen it.
This was like one of the first Super Bowls I remember sitting down and watching.
Yeah. Also, halftime show, tribute to Motown's 40th anniversary. Boys to Men, Queen Latifah, yes. Smokey Robinson.
See, something that I kind of overlooked when I was looking at Super Bowl 38's credentials is that, listen to this halftime show: Jessica Simpson, Ocean of Soul, Spirit of Houston, Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, P. Diddy, Nelly, and Kid Rock.
Yeah, Super Bowl halftime shows have been a mess for a while.
That was the first one where it was like, holy crap, like, what are we doing?
Yeah, yeah. And slowly they've scaled it back until finally, mercifully, we're down to one performer again. But, for a while, because, again, Super Bowl 32 was kind of like this, too. It was like, just throw everyone out there and see what sticks. Like, no, the best shows are always, like, one performer.
Yep, for sure. Can we also talk about how fun the Super Bowl logos used to be? Like, how colorful and, like...
Yes.
Risk-taking they were, and now they're just, like, really boring.
It is the onset of the death of American exceptionalism. The story of American exceptionalism can be told through Super Bowl logos, because, as you're right, we started with, like, you know, a very eager throwback looking look to it. And ever since, when did they start, like, standardizing it? Was it Super Bowl 45 where they started that? Like, when was the first time they decided to be like, we're just going to set down, like, this ironclad look that no one will be able to escape from?
It had to be like 40 or something, like XL. Like, that's when it just was like big X, big L. That's it.
No, XL had a colorful logo, was it?
It was just red and blue, I mean.
But still, it wasn't like this monochrome logo that they're putting on everything now. That's what I'm talking about. Like, I think it was Super Bowl, like, 45 where they started doing that. Yes, it was. It was Super Bowl 45 where they went to just the giant Lombardi trophy and the chrome letters. And then, like, the one innovation since has been now they add on, like, the stadium where it's played.
Womp womp.
All right, Let's get to the mailbag. I think that was a pretty good list cast.
That was good.
A lot of memories.
It's a tease for what you can expect into the off season from Pride of Detroit.
One of our least contentious list cast, but I think that was because there were so many good options.
Yeah. There's we could have gone even farther back, but again, like, I didn't want to do us too much injustice by not having, you know, stuff we didn't have memories of. But stick around. Mailbag is up next. Mail time. As always, Pride of Detroit, hashtag AskPOD to get us on Twitter. Any of your questions? And we got quite a few. Okay, fine. You've been wanting to do this. Go ahead. Yep.
Well, guys, last week we had a bit of contention going with some of the topics that we talked about.
I can't believe we're talking about this instead of this was the XFL.
Nope. And we put a call out to our users a little bit. Like, do you like this? The 5 minutes of wrestling talk that we get other podcast?
Make any call out?
Oh, no, we did. Yeah, we did.
You might have.
Yes, it was me. And so we got one. Not quite in the form that I would have preferred, in the form of a 1-star review. But let's read it and review it. Because we promise to read all of our reviews, because we take feedback seriously. Title: Enough Wrestling Talk by Colton Prio. And we can make fun of him all you want, because he, in his first words, he says, "I unsubscribed." I unsubscribed in the middle of last episode because of all the wrestling talk. I started listening to this podcast at the start of last season, and every once in a while there were some wrestling talk, and I thought it was a little joke or aside between two of the hosts. But now it seems almost half and half lions in wrestling, causing me to honestly question if you guys actually want to be taken seriously as Lions reporters. I have nothing against wrestling, but I think this is supposed to be a Lions podcast. If you want to do a wrestling podcast, go make a separate one. For now, I'll be sticking with other Lions podcasts, which, for the simple reason that they focus on the Detroit Lions, are far superior products.
All right, Jeremy. You were so hung up on reading this one, and I know exactly why. So, I'm going to give you 5 minutes, and only you Let's talk about the stuff they want to talk about. Let's talk about the Detroit Lions. Why should the Lions go to a 3-4 defense? 5 minutes. Don't fail me.
First of all, this isn't fair that you're making me do it by myself. But
come on, Jeremy. Come on.
Hey. Do you know it's not fair saying that this podcast is almost half and half football and wrestling? Yeah.
You spent 10 minutes
Five minutes of wrestling talk all of a sudden is extrapolated into what? 45 minutes?
We get this only on wrestling. I don't understand it. We do 30-minute list casts on sandwiches and Halloween movies.
Everyone can relate to a goddamn sandwich. No one get, like, you're taking 80 to 90% of our listeners,
Jeremy,
out of it.
My 5 minutes of 3-4 defense talk.
Maybe you should stop interrupting me then. Why would you bring up this topic? Because obviously the Lions don't need to switch to a 3-4.
No, you don't need to say anything because I will cut it out because it will be too so fucking boring. Because that's why. That's what we're saving you from by talking about wrestling for five measly minutes.
People are listening
not even
to
about
Detroit
wrestling.
Lions
we
podcast.
Saved it for one of the biggest things of the year, Royal Rumble. That was it. You know why? Because sometimes it's better to be talking about that than some of your questions.
Every pay-per-view event is the biggest of the year, and we have to spend fucking 5 minutes talking about it.
Jeremy,
what?
We're on the road to WrestleMania.
Get the fuck out of here.
Don't make me read Smog's gold coin question to start
no,
this
no,
mailbag.
No, I think we
no.
should. We should probably.
No,
we should probably. No, we should probably. We should probably source the mailbag. We should actually get some reader interaction. Get into the questions that are posed to us by our own listeners.
What you people out there want us to talk about.
We should put a poll out. How about we attach a poll to this podcast?
Let's not.
Come on. Why not?
Nope. Why I don't want to do that. I don't want
to
do that.
Because you don't want to lose. Because you realize that no one wants to listen to wrestling. You guys want to talk about wrestling. You guys.
But
why
do we keep getting these questions?
Then why are we getting the questions?
You have a separate group in our Slack room to talk about wrestling.
Why are we getting the questions?
Yelling.
Well, because you know what? I'm going to start demanding a group for. I'm going to start demanding a group for Mr. Robot.
We don't talk about Mr. Robot every week. We talked about it once.
We don't talk about wrestling every week.
You talk about it almost every week. There is a wrestling reference in almost every single podcast.
We talked about wrestling on the last podcast as a way to explain. We used wrestling terminology as a way to explain football.
Yeah, that was the second time you started talking about wrestling that podcast.
Smog's gold coin writes in.
Oh, fuck you! We are not doing this, Smog. I will ban the shit out of you. I'm sorry. We are not doing this. So anyways, the Lions don't have enough linebackers to move to a 3-4 line.
Keep going. I've got my stopwatch right here.
You lasted 3 seconds before you broke up into laughter.
That's because I know Chris is going to cut me off. Oh, this is boring. You're talking about football. I don't know anything about football. I want to talk wrestling.
You want to know why 97.1 isn't good? Because they ain't got anything else to talk about. Because they don't want to do the fun stuff like we're doing here.
We can do fun stuff. Wrestling is not fun stuff for one-third of the people currently in this call. And I would say at least 75% of our listeners.
A, I think that number's high. B,
let's put up a poll.
That sounds like a personal problem. And no, I'm not doing a poll. Because that's going to ask a lot of people on Twitter who are maybe not wanting to venture into our comments section or sign up to be represented. So why don't I put it on my Twitter? Or maybe Ryan should put it on his Twitter. I'm just saying, you want home field advantage. You are not getting home field advantage.
Put it on the post. The people that go to the post and listen to it.
No.
You're scared.
No. No, because I think no matter which way it goes, someone will be coming here next week and crying about poll manipulation.
Yeah, I know exactly who it would be.
No, it'd be you. Yeah, exactly.
We're probably 6 or 7 minutes in the mailbag. We haven't taken one question yet.
Yes. Honolulu Blue asks, which do you pour in the bowl first, milk or cereal? This isn't a question.
Yeah, no, this isn't a matter of debate either.
It's cereal first.
You always pour the cereal in first.
Do people put in the milk first and then just let the cereal splash milk all over the counter?
I mean, I think it can happen the other way too. Like, you could go cereal first and then pour in the milk and you can get milk all over the place, especially if you're eating a trash cereal like Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Okay.
Well, no, I think that's the main argument, is that, like, if you have a flake or a, I don't even know what shape you call Cinnamon Toast Crunch, a square, obviously, but, like, you're risking dumping milk all over your counter, but you need the cereal in there for a reference as to how much milk you have in there, right? You can't just eyeball it like some freak just dumping milk in first.
If you put the milk in first and you don't put the cereal in first, the cereal at the bottom isn't going to get milk on it, right? Yeah.
Yep.
Like, you're supposed to pour into so it rises from the bottom so the, like, the cereal gets touched by the milk on the way down.
Talk about the lions!
I'm trying to be a good person right now.
I can make you feel one of these, like, really staid questions, Jeremy. I really could. You are messing with the source code here.
Bring it on, bitch.
Wade Goodell asks, how would you change the NFL's overtime rules? And why is going to something resembling the college format the right answer?
I think it's the wrong answer.
Really?
Yeah, no, I just don't...
What about for a playoff game? Like, I can understand it in the regular season, you want to get the game over with, but in a playoff, it should be more like a college format, where both sides are going to have a chance to touch the ball.
How about you just make it so that the first possession, no matter what happens, it's not going to end the game. So, well,
that's what it is. That's what it is for college.
Well, no, I mean, college, you start at a certain yard line and you're starting on offense on the opponent's side of the field, right?
Yeah.
So,
35.
Right. So
yeah, and it gets closer as it goes on. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a
also,
big fan of that.
There's no clock either. So
sure. Right. Yeah. It's all. Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, what do you guys think? Do you think that overtime needs to be changed in any certain way?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to cry foul as a Falcons fan, no pun intended, that
no,
they lost the game, because they deserve to obviously lose that game. But right. It does seem a little unfair that a toss of the coin was the reason that tired defense had to come back out on the field, right? Because yeah. if Matt Ryan comes out there, he could have very well won that game for him. Matt Ryan played an excellent game all game. I wouldn't have been shocked at all to see him go 80 yards downfield and win that game. It seems weird. It seems weird to me that you don't get tit for tat. And I'm with Chris, too. Like, I understand it in the regular season. You don't want conflicts with TV, with games running into each other. You don't want games running long because of injury, that sort of thing. But this is a championship game. Let's give both guys a fair shot here.
This is like using the shootout in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
It kind of feels like, I mean, it's not as much of a gimmick as a shootout is, but I kind of feel the same way. Yeah.
It's the same spirit. It's using overtime rules that are clearly intended to end the game quickly. Evan at Big Slick McDick, friend of the show, asks, who decided boiling hot dogs was a good idea?
Probably Alex Reno's family.
I think that's a question that we can all agree on is a great question, because boiled hot dogs are gross.
Piss. Just absolute
what?
Piss.
I don't... What's the logic behind that?
I don't know. So it has more taste in its own watery juices.
Wow, I really can't wait for Grand Rapids now. I'm really into a hot dog right now.
We didn't say anything.
Why
did it not say anything about this? Okay. I'm sorry. If you're still listening to this podcast like an hour and a half in, this is your special treat. We will mention it next week. Jeremy's coming to town, and we are all like a bunch, like nearly everyone from Pride of Detroit, except for like Andrew. We're going to be chilling in Grand Rapids. We're going to the Griffins game on the 15th, I think. For $2 beer night.
And $2 hot dog night.
$2 hot dog and beer night, yes.
Friday the 17th. So if you want to come meet us, just start singing Africa somewhere. Go to the game, start singing Africa, and we'll find you.
Or even better, we'll probably be at Founders afterwards, too. After the game. So that's another good place to sing Africa to find us.
And we'll be at the game early because you can start buying $2 beers at 6 o'clock. And it shuts.
We are going to be bombed.
No pictures, no videos. We don't want this leak into Deadspin, so.
No mas. I'm not even sure Alex is going to make it because we're going to dunk him in the vat of Dirty Bastard at Founders.
We're just going to throw him in.
Yep.
Can you fly, Bobby?
This is another inside joke thing. Me and Ryan have been quoting Clarence Boddicker lines at each other for like 3 days now.
From the greatest Detroit movie.
Ever. Yep.
Dick Jones! I work for Dick Jones!
I work for Dick Jones!
The leader, number two at OCP! OCP runs the cops!
I don't know. Maybe I'm just not making myself clear. I don't want to fuck with you, son. But I got the connection. I got the sales organization. I got the muscle to shove enough of this factory so far up your stupid wop ass that you'll shit snow for a year.
Frankie, blow this cocksucker's head off.
Ooh, guns. Come on, Sal. The Tigers are playing two nights. I never miss a game.
So many good lines from that man. God. A user who identifies himself as President Rod Wood asks, what food would you like added to concession stands at Ford Field? I have an answer for this, but do you guys have anything you want to say?
I kind of want that Whitecaps sandwich from...
Oh, man.
That we
oh,
saw God.
What was that, the Grand Slam?
Something like that. It had, like, pulled pork and bacon and...
Fried jalapeno chips.
But I would like a good, like, barbecue dish. I don't know if they have a good barbecue pulled pork sandwich or anything like that. I haven't been in a couple of years, but...
There's a Slow's up on the club level.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So let's make that a little more widely available. We don't all want to get in line for Slow's.
How many of you guys actually want to buy food at the concession stands, though, at a game? Like, I feel like my wallet's being taken advantage of.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of a bigger problem I have with, like, we need to find out a way to not make concession food, like, rip you off completely. However, I will say this, because normally my routine when I go to a Lions game is I'm hitting up Plaka in Greektown before, but there's no Euros at Ford Field. And I'm just saying, like, you know, we got such a large Middle Eastern population in Detroit and Dearborn. We've got Greektown. Why not have some Euro and shawarma options? Diversify it.
I can dig it. I can get behind it. I mean, I'm not going to order it, but you should definitely always have options.
I mean, and how good would that look in a concourse, too? Those big, giant, you know, skewers of meat rotating, getting slices shaved off to serve to people. And it's portable. Shawarma and Euro is both very portable food.
I'm sorry, I wasn't sure if you were talking about shawarmas or the Chicago Bears when they show up to Ford Field. How you doing?
I like it. All right, next question here. Levy Johnson, which Detroit team do you think will win a championship soonest?
I can tell you that in a couple weeks, I think it's going to be the Grand Rapids Griffins by about 8:30. But I think the window is nearly closed in the Tigers. Like, this is their last...
Yeah.
Desperate chance at maybe finding a way to, you know, conjure up some magic. If it doesn't happen this year for them, I don't see it happening for a while for them.
I think their best shot was back in 2013.
Like, sure.
The window's been closing for a few years. So.
Yeah. The Pistons don't seem like they're any closer to a championship. The Red Wings are kind of on a two-game win streak.
Speaking about a window closing.
I don't... Yeah.
Is it
the Lions? That's what I'm trying to get around to. Is it the Lions?
They're clearly the closest, but I think the Super Bowl is the hardest one to win. And
you think
so? Because I don't necessarily best team always wins the Super Bowl. But I feel like that's almost true for every other sport, except for maybe the Stanley Cup.
I was going to say the Stanley Cup, Red Wings just need, like, as little as the Red Wings have done getting into the Stanley Cup playoffs last few seasons, all they need to do is get in, and they could be... But at the same time, too, I also think, too, if you're looking at the Red Wings, they still have a good crop of young guys.
They just don't have they don't have a superstar right now. And they still don't have a defense.
Well, I mean, okay, how many teams in the NHL have superstars anymore?
I mean, there's a few of them, and they're clearly sometimes the better teams.
Subban and Crosby, who else?
Ovechkin.
Oh, Ovechkin, sure, sure. Yeah, but he's kind of I mean,
Jaeger.
What?
Jaeger is the eternal superstar.
He's the Highlander.
He's
I'm just saying, we've got four. I mean, if we're including Jaeger, we've got like five. Okay, without Jaeger, we've got four right now. So
I don't know. Like, Taves is pretty good, as much as I don't like the Blackhawks.
But I don't think of Taves as a superstar. But that's kind of my point, is that you don't.
The Wings don't have anyone close to that level right now. They don't have someone that's probably in the top 50 or 40 talent-wise, I would say. They're really far back.
I almost wanted to pipe up and say something, but I cannot disagree with you
there. Yeah.
You think eventually they're just going to have to just gut that front office, too? Like, I don't know what else to do.
What's the date today? It's February 6th, right?
Yeah.
Mark my words, within 2 years, Steve Eiserman will be your general manager of the Detroit Red Wings.
Holy shit.
Cut that out. Make sure we have that saved for when we're doing the podcast 2 years from now.
I was channeling my inner Miss Cleo.
R.I.P.
Friend of the podcast. Spirit of the podcast.
Our first posthumous friend of the show.
I hate you guys so much. All right, GV42, since Terrell Davis is in the Hall of Fame now, is Calvin more worthy than before?
I don't know how Calvin can make the Hall of Fame if Terrell Owens isn't in the Hall of Fame.
Seriously, what the hell is with that? T.O. is in. Stop this shit.
It's reporters who are... It's media members who are clearly holding a grudge against him for not being...
Sure, this is turning into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Just petty grudges.
I think if anything, the Terrell Davis Hall of Fame thing... shows that he's kind of got a steeper hill to climb, because Terrell Davis probably got in there because of his Super Bowls, right? Denver doesn't win a Super Bowl. We're probably not talking about Terrell Davis right now.
No, probably not.
And so Calvin doesn't even have a postseason win, and he retired early. I don't like his chances right now, if I'm being honest.
Weibay51 asks, since it seemed to work out well the first time, do you think Bob Quinn is going to favor drafting from the Big Ten again?
I hadn't thought about that.
I did a mock draft today while I was at work, because, you know, it's the Monday after the Super Bowl and you're very unpatriotic if you're not super unproductive. But I drafted, I think, three Michigan players. So I don't know. Like, I think that there's a lot of draftable talent from especially two schools. Like, Michigan and Ohio State have a lot of guys that you can pull from. So
that was the exact game plan last year.
Yeah.
Mr. Zebra, not really a question, but I pray that we never do that when we finally make it to the Super Bowl.
Amen.
I also had a few other people talking about this, like, who was it? Okay, here's one from Ian Howard. After watching the Super Bowl and the two teams in it, where, in your opinion, is the biggest separation between the Lions and those caliber teams? And what do they need to do to close that gap? How quickly can it be done? That last part of the question, I think, is most interesting. Because, again, I think some people are expecting this to really turn around in, like, 1 or 2 years. And it's not.
I think that it could. You want to know why? We have Matthew Stafford.
Yeah.
Like, if you have an elite quarterback, I think the odds are kind of in your favor from the get-go. They're like, from Jump Street, like, you have an edge up on the rest of the competition. And I think it's just going to take a year or two for Bob Quinn to really kind of turn over, like we said, you know, the bottom of this roster and start to get in some players and develop some players and acquire some depth. And stranger things have happened.
I mean, the flip side of that coin is that the Packers are still going to have Aaron Rodgers, which is going to make winning that division hard. But I mean, that's a good point. The Lions have won seven or more games in the past four seasons, and I think that's Stafford as his prime. So, like, that's the baseline. I don't see this team losing more than 10 games with Stafford as their quarterback ever again.
That's bold, but I seriously think that there's a lot of credence to that.
Yeah. I think we're done seeing these 2-12, 2-14, 3-13 seasons with Matthew Stafford at the helm. And so, you know, it just takes filling out those extra parts as far as specifically what that needs to be. I mean, running game obviously is a big focus, but defense. I mean, this defense needs some sort of playmakers. They can't be on the field for as long as Atlanta's defense was on the field yesterday. So I don't know if there's a specific position. I'm always in tune with defensive ends. We saw how rattled Brady got with a good pass rush. That's what I'm focusing on. And I have bored Crystal Mew because we haven't talked about wrestling.
No, sorry. It's because we've been going for like several hours doing this thing. So, and I have not been sleeping well. Speaking of that, Smog's Gold Coin, watching the Super Bowl last night, was anyone else reminded of an AJ Styles versus John Cena match? I mean, you have the dynasty from Boston that just won't go away versus the exciting and electrifying force to be reckoned with from Georgia. I can't be the only one, right? By the way, any predictions for Elimination Chamber?
I really appreciate him tucking in that last question by asking for our predictions for the entire card for Elimination Chamber in a roundabout way. I'm going to resist doing it just because I like being a part of the Pride of Detroit website and being a contributor and editor. So in lieu of losing that title and those credentials,
I'm just talking about half the podcast for this, apparently.
Right. I think I'm already kind of over my 20-second limit, but it was very much like the Royal Rumble.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And
John Cena!
We can pause it here. Do you need to go get that? Yeah. Is it Nora?
Yeah.
Is that the wrestling the wrestling mafia?
It's Randy Savage back from the grave.
Brock Lesnar's at your door, bitch.
In the shorts. Jimmy John's,
Jimmy John's.
Bitch.
He's bringing Jimmy John's. Jimmy John's. You order Jimmy John's, Jeremy?
He puts you in an F5.
Oh, Paul Heyman's going to speak at your funeral.